From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for August 2nd, 2019. The State Fair is nicely underway through next weekend. This Wednesday at the Pabst Theater, it's Bruce Hornsby. And this weekend, the Brewers are heading south to Wrigley. Well, according to a Labor Department report, Americans work longer and have less free time than medieval peasants. kind of puts the jousting and the bar wenches at Renaissance Fair into a whole new light. And the setting is Lyons, Colorado, where a bear named Cheeseburger has been breaking into quote-unquote bear-proof dumpsters. Well, these dumpsters just happen to be right behind dispensaries where old Cheeseburger just helps himself to the trash. There's nothing as worrisome as a 600-pound bear with the munchies. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Steve Giles, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty ugly week. NASDAQ down almost 4%, shedding 326 points to close at 8,004. Broader markets, S&P stock composite 500 shed 3.1% this week, losing 94 points to close at 2932. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 707 points this week, losing 2.6%. Still up 15.1% for the year. The Dow closed the week, the final bell this afternoon in New York, at 26,485. 10-year Treasury now quite a bit below 2%. 1.86%, that's the lowest close in 2.5 years. You know, Kyle, has started on Wednesday afternoon after Fed Chairman Jay Powell said that he sees limited need for future stimulus, meaning he's not sure that we're going to keep cutting interest rates. The stock market reversed course Tuesday. We had lost 23 points Wednesday coming into the announcement for the Fed, lost 333 points. Damage continued on Thursday, 280 points, when the president said that he's going to double up on the tariffs on China, effectively taxing what's not being taxed, Chinese imports, $300 billion. That's a lot of money, and the markets really took a hit on that news as well. Seems that everybody's hunkering down for a prolonged trade conflict, and it's doubtful that they'll make any headway. And it's very different than just June of this year, where the president delayed the 10% tariffs and said, yeah, we're getting kind of close, and the markets just really took off.
You know, I think a good message for investors that maybe they shouldn't be pinning their hopes for the future on the Fed, that, you know, there's so many things out there that can go wrong in other directions that the Fed alone isn't going to save us. And so, you know, we got that rate cut that we had expected. We thought maybe, you know, depending on language, that might be a little bit of a tailwind for the markets. And then, you know, the next day we get hit with these additional tariffs. We get hit with, you know, just another escalation in this trade war. And I think, you know, just a reminder for investors that given how well things have gone so far this year, it's going to take some more good news before we let those markets run any higher than they are.
And Kyle, it's always so interesting to me when what's basically good news, you know, the Fed chair is saying, we don't really need to cut rates a lot. Things look fairly good out there from my perch. And the markets take it as bad news because they were anticipating additional cuts by the end of the year.
Isn't it amazing how that works? It's been bad news, it's good news for the markets for so long that even in our own minds, sometimes we flip that. And you're absolutely right. You know, it really was good news from the Fed, despite the fact that maybe the markets didn't see it as such.
Steve, we've had pretty weak economic data come out. Now, oil prices are really plunging. You know, oil's down, as you know, 20% from the April highs. $53 a barrel, dropped 7% just this week. We've often looked at oil prices as an indicator of future business activity. So if, in fact, oil is going to keep going down like that, doesn't speak well for economic activity globally moving forward.
No, and that's where I think the dollar comes in, Bob. You've seen some strengthening of the dollar. Of course, with the Fed lowering rates, that could mean that the dollar is going to strengthen a little bit more. It also does favor focusing a bit more on some domestic investments at the expense of maybe an international allocation.
Well, dollar now is at a 12-month high, so I think that underscores what you're saying, because oil is sold in dollar terms around the world. Dollar rises, and oil is going to go down in price. So just one thing to watch here in this global landscape. You know, Joel, let me bring in, you know, the program. We created 164,000 new jobs here, quite a bit above the 100,000 new jobs we need every month just to keep ahead of population. Unemployment rate didn't change at all, 3.7%. Earnings are about the same. Wage gains are fairly lackluster.
Yeah, it was good news on the labor front as far as the report today. A lot of good things in there. But we're also seeing signs that, I mean, so that was the 106th month in a row that the U.S. Added employment. That's never been done before. And it's showing, the age is showing. So, you know, some of that is slowing down. That 164,000 is about what we've averaged so far this year per month. And but it's down from 223,000 a month last year. So that, you know, you'd expect at some point that that slows down, but you'd also expect that that would help wages, that if employers are having a hard time finding and keeping workers, that they're raising the wages. One number that's not looked at, you know, usually in the headlines is it's called U6, and it's kind of a measure of underemployment.
Down to 7%.
Right, and that's the lowest since 2000. So maybe what that indicates, and you can't go too much by 1 month's numbers, but that might be showing that there's less slack in the job pool, that it's going to be even harder for employers to find the workers that they're looking for, and maybe that's going to be where we'll see some more wage inflation.
And Joel, I was struck by the consumer confidence numbers, much higher than expected. Of course, higher consumer confidence spills over to strong consumer spending.
Right, and those actually are helped by the employment situation. If people are feeling confident in you know where they're working and where their income's coming from, they're going to feel, you know, more confident about their personal finances, and that's what helps spending, which we know, you know, generates 2/3 of what's going on in our economy, and that's a really bright spot that we're seeing right now.
Saw an interview the other day with Mohammed El Aran, former head of investments for PIMCO, former head of Harvard's endowment. He said, you just don't get recessions when consumer spending remains this strong. And he's probably right on that count, at least for now. Unemployment at a 50-year low, wages, you know, growing modestly. But anybody that wants to get a job pretty much can. So spending is really the cornerstone of this U.S. economy.
One number that we look at every week is the initial unemployment claims, and taking a four-week average of that. That's near a 50-year low, but what's not mentioned is that 50 years ago, the U.S. population, working-age population, was 78% smaller than it is now. So to have, you know, numbers...
You mean not as tall?
Yeah, there's a height thing, too. I don't think it's 78%, but we had like 116 million people in the U.S., working-age adults, you know, back in 1969, and now it's what, like 207 million. So that's impressive that we've got the low unemployment claims with a bigger population.
Well, long term, that's what you want to see, a growth in the working age population. We've seen that, you know, in the last 60 years or so, and coinciding with more productive workers. We haven't had much in terms of growth in working age population, you know, the past couple decades. And also, productivity has been anemic. But you look longer term, and that's certainly been the case, though.
Bob, wouldn't it make sense, though, that a lot of what caused some of this sell-off yesterday and today on the announcement of additional tariffs would be perhaps tightening of consumer purse strings as companies and businesses pass on those increased costs of tariffs to the end consumer that might be not willing to spend the extra money?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's the consumers that pay the tariffs, not the Chinese. I'm not so sure that we import that much from China that'll move the needle, certainly on consumer prices. I mean, you'll certainly see it in electronics. You'll certainly see it in apparel. But, you know, the reality is what's happening is a lot of manufacturing is moving to places like Vietnam. Doesn't help our overall trade numbers. We're just importing the products from a different source that's not subject to the tariffs. So, you know, I think consumer spending is, I mean, not only the proverbial 70% of our GDP, but it's strong enough now. And I'm not sure that it's growing much. You know, Adam, as you indicate, we do have an aging population here in the United States. People tend to spend the most money at age 48 in the United States. So as more and more people get older than 48, it's a foregone conclusion that you shift past 48 years old and you start thinking about setting money aside for your old age as opposed to putting new cars in your garage and new clothes on the closet rack. So, and you really can't do a whole lot about fertility rates here in the United States. It seems that we're stuck on ground zero with immigration policy in the United States, at least for now. So population growth can't really change much. Productivity, on the other hand, that should change with the embracing of artificial intelligence, machine learning, augmented reality. I think that's a work in progress now. You know, when I look at the overall backdrop, it's very disconcerting to see the market sell off on trade. In spite of what the president says, trade wars are not easy to win. You know, unfortunately, he's outside the mainstream of political thought on the subject of trade conflicts. And they're difficult to stop. You know, everybody starts digging in. And, you know, now this is the fourth attempt to try to, you know, squeeze the Chinese. And they seem to hunker down and double down even every time we go there. That's the whole nature of a trade conflict. It's the Hatfield and McCoys. You can't even remember why you started fighting. So it's unfortunate that we're in the middle of this now. The Chinese are now blaming the U.S. for all of their ailments, including the protest movement in Hong Kong. Not sure that we've got anything to do with that. But now you get an idea of the elevated animosity, not only here in the United States, but in China as well. You know, Adam, let me ask you a question. It's got to be an eye-opener to most of us that the 10-year Treasury is now quite a bit below 2%. The 3-month Treasury is above the 10-year. So we've talked at length about the inverted yield curve. But, you know, what really strikes me, Adam, about the 10-year trading below 2% is nobody's really expecting much in the way of growth here moving forward. 10-year pretty accurate in forecasting future growth rates.
I mean, it's true for growth. It's also true for inflation, I think, is one of the reasons why 10-year Treasury is at 1.8%. You know, here we are 10 years into this economic expansion. We're closer to the next recession than we are to the last. And in past expansions, you would have seen inflation take off at this point. And we haven't had that. Part of the reason why the 10-year Treasury is at 1.8. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, on the show weeks ago that both stocks and bonds can't be right. We've had stock prices go up. We've had bond prices go up. And we have a reversal of that this week. Stocks sold off and bonds did rally.
When you look at the trade conflicts, you know, I was mentioning to a client earlier today about some of the issues in China that have nothing to do with trade. And, you know, it's wrong. The popular Wall Street saying is, don't worry about anything. When they resolve the trade conflicts, everything will be fine. I mean, that's not true. There are areas of the Chinese economy like indebtedness, like problems in their phantom banking system that have nothing to do with trade and aren't going to get resolved just because we resolve some of the trade conflicts. So I think that's a big area to focus on moving forward is, you know, really what is going on in China. It's hard. No one really trusts the data coming out of China. I don't even think their leadership trusts those numbers and, you know, seems to be impacting Germany, Europe's largest economy. We saw that Europe only grew 0.8%, you know, contrasting with our 2.1% growth this last quarter. And the numbers keep going down. Germany, of course, 40% of their economy is exports. A lot of that goes to China, and China's not calling them up as much as they used to. So the continuation of the trade conflicts, I think, spells, you know, some significant issues for the countries like Germany, like Japan, that are export-dependent, countries like Australia, also export-dependent countries in Latin America like Brazil, Chile, very export-dependent countries that I think are going to be struggling for a while until China potentially reaccelerates and we get some kind of resolution on the trade front.
And Bob, for a while we were talking about the likelihood of a slowdown in global growth, and I think now for maybe the better part of the last couple of months, we've been able to talk about the realities of slowing global growth. And you look at something like Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, kind of a gauge of manufacturing activity around the world. And for two consecutive months now, manufacturing activity has been in contraction globally. You look at 18 out of the 30 countries in that index showing contraction right now. And, you know, I think there's signs all over the place that the economy has slowed, not just that, you know, we're expecting it to slow. And so, you know, this trade war comes at kind of a bad time, in that we can't just get out of the way and maybe let some of these forces like the Fed, like the European Central Bank, try to boost growth a little bit. Instead, the U.S. and China in particular are putting themselves in the middle of it all, putting that fight on, you know, kind of front and center, and you know, serving as an impediment to getting beyond some of those growth issues.
It's interesting to see one of the reasons that the Fed Chair Powell gave for lowering interest rates on Wednesday this week was that the problems with the trade conflict. Mm-hmm. And I heard an analyst say it's like shooting yourself in the foot to get another dose of morphine, that we've got these self-inflicted wounds, and now we're trying to administer relief to the economy by lowering rates because of a problem that was created in Washington. You know, Kyle, you and I shot a video early this week that is attached to the newsletter that's going out to our clients this afternoon. And one of the things that we talked about, and perhaps one of the more encouraging things that I've read recently, came from the Fed minutes at the end of June, where the Fed anticipates now economic recovery the year after next. Not all that long from now, but you know, the Fed is counting on acceleration, reacceleration, if you will, of economic activity year after next.
Yeah, I think so critically important for especially stock investors to remember the forward-looking nature of the stock market, the fact that even if we see a slowdown right now that, you know, again, we're kind of in the midst of, you know, we can't really predict when we're going to get back out of that. We can't really predict how severe it's going to be. We can point to the trend. We can point to the fact that, yeah, things probably slow down a little more from here. But, you know, I think encouraged by, as you mentioned, the likelihood that the Fed is pointing to of some reacceleration in 2021 and behind. And that, to me, suggests there's not a lot that you need to do in response to the current slowdown, as long as you entered it in a place that you're happy with in terms of your overall portfolio allocations. I think what it means, though, is that we probably need to adjust our expectations down a little from where we are. The fact that we're up, you know, 20%+ this year, maybe a little bit of a front-running of what we expect for growth later on. And then again, if you can hold on for the better part of the next 18 months, maybe keep most of those gains. You know, again, in 2021, we see some of that reacceleration, and stocks may be looking ahead of that by 6 months or more.
Yeah, I think it's good to look, you know, from like 30,000 feet down and just kind of get a sense of where we are. You know, interest rates and earnings. Interest rates are low. Inflation is low. The Federal Reserve still accommodative with monetary policy, and businesses are widely profitable. I mean, you put those four things together, still a relatively healthy environment for long-term investors. And I mean, you mentioned earnings. Not much to write home about for earnings this year. I think earnings for the, you know, all of 2019, just shy of 2%. But you look into quarter one and quarter two for 2020, earnings expect to be up about 9% in the first quarter and about 10% in the second quarter. And the market won't wait until the second quarter next year to make a move if it does. It's a forward-looking indicator.
And Adam, I think the one piece we tend to miss in all that is the valuation piece. And at the start of the week, you know, or maybe kind of the end of July, we were talking about a market that was probably 7 or 8% overvalued. Given that we had a pretty rough week this week, you know, maybe not the way you want to get it, but we've seen valuations come back in line a little bit. And so perhaps that means that we're pricing it a little more of that slowdown.
Well, folks, this is the end of yet another Money Talk. Go Brewers. They took 2 out of 3 against the Cubbies last weekend. Hopefully they'll come pretty close to doing the same, if not sweeping them. Everybody enjoy their weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.